Oppenheimer.
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
Listen, Nerd Right Radio!
Nerd Alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
Welcome to episode 11 of Nerd Pride Radio. 11, the maximum setting on Spinal Tap's amps. So, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I'm awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, a computer nerd, movie nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, and probably seven other kinds of nerd that I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You're listening to Nerd Pride Radio. This is the place where I go every week to ramble on about all the nerdy stuff that just won't fit in my brain anymore. Oh, my co-host this week is the liquefied corpse of Father Magruder. All right. We're going to get straight into it because I've got so much to talk about, I don't even know how we're going to fit it all in. So this is the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. This is the time for me where I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting, I add it to my master list. And the best stuff gets spewed out onto you every week when I record, you lucky dogs. So straight into the list. First off, the Nerd Pride Turntable.
Jamboree handouts, two turntables and a microphone. Bottles and cans, or just clap your hands, or just clap your hands.
Yep, this is just a wannabe music nerd talking about music. My turntable topic this week is punk music, and this is actually going to kind of dominate the entire cast, so I hope you're interested. All right, punk music, punk rock, is one of my favorites. I love punk rock in lots of different forms. Started off, you know, back in the mid-70s with groups like the Ramones, the Clash, the Sex Pistols. And these groups were rebellious, anti-authority, usually, well, not usually, sometimes with a political message. And the important part is the music, really minimalistic, stripped down, typically short songs, but fast, hard edge, with lots of passion, lots of fire in them. And that's the part of punk music that really appeals to me, is I love fast songs. I love fast and intense. All right, so you can feel that emotion, that power, that real rawness coming through. And I just enjoy that. And, you know, from those beginnings, you know, punk became a bunch of different stuff. It kind of in the 80s split up. There was, you know, hardcore stuff with, I don't know, Black Flag. I'm a big Henry Rollins fan. Dead Kennedys, Misfits. The hardcore stuff, the Oi, that kind of thing. Not my favorite punk stuff. But then it also turned into some of the post-punk, the beginning of New Wave and other alternative stuff, you know, Violet Femmes, Susie and the Banshees, I can't even think off the top of my head, Joy Division, stuff like that. And I enjoy some of that. But nowadays punk is frickin' everywhere, all right? And it's even, all right, you got top 40 now. Green Day kind of broke top 40 pop punk really big in the 90s, all right? So Green Day, and you're looking at bands like The Offspring, one of the two number bands that I always mix up together, Blink 182 and 41, Sum 41. These are, yeah, and there's tons of them, all right? I'm just giving the ones off the top of my head, the ones that I have samples of in my own music collection. But there are lots of punk bands out there, and punk is really mainstream nowadays, all right? And they can write, you know, from anything, you know, from politically charged messages like, you know, stuff in American Idiot with its cultural commentary, to just, you know, fun pop, you know, romance, dance, crap, you know, normal stuff. I mean, it's a diverse group. But what really is fascinating to me right now, the stuff that I'm kind of collecting and sampling here and there, is apparently you can mix punk with anything. All right? You want punk country? Okay, well, we've got cow punk. Bluegrass punk. You want to mix it with old 80s songs? Oh, my God. We've got 80s punk covers coming out our ears. That's actually how I started. I'll get to that in just a minute. You want to put punk in your Celtic folk music. You want to put punk in your, well, I'll get to all of those. Where I started with punk music, and this is why this is going to be such a big topic this week, is not so much so you can hear me haver on about how much I love punk or the history of punk or anything like that. No, the reason this is a big topic is I want to give you a lot of samples of my favorite from different varieties, different mashups of punk music. That's where I want to go with it. The only one I'm not going to cover here is punk polka. It just occurred to me the other day that, oh my God, I don't think I've ever heard any punk polka. I should look for some. Now, this is how my mind works, is I come up with a music genre and I go, hey, can I combine that with punk? And sure enough, somebody has. And it occurred to me with punk polka, every Weird Al album has a polka selection, right? And it's always remakes of recent tunes, big hits that everyone knows the words to, and he redoes them as polka, and he redoes them at super high speed, and he pumps them up really intense. And it occurred to me that even though it's not labeled as such, as punk. That's the essence of what you do with punk music, all right? You take whatever your music is, you amp it up to 11, and you just rip on it. And that's what Weird Al does, and I really appreciate that. And it's silly. He adds in all the sound effects and the goofy noises, and it's always Weird Al's voice, which is just going to be comic by itself. But I really appreciate what he does, and I love all of his polka versions of stuff, his polka medleys, his polka version of Bohemian Rhapsody. This is good stuff, and my second son has really gotten into those, and we've gone out and bought pretty much all of his polka medleys. And we've been listening to those, and it's just cool, cool stuff. But let me start where I started with punk music. And this is not too long ago. I mean, 10, 15 years ago, my brother gave me a mixed CD of punk covers. And it was cover songs of mostly 80s tunes, stuff that we had grown up with, but some 90s, more recent stuff. He did a punk cover of the Spice Girls. Tell Me What You Want. I don't know the name of the song, if that's even it. But anyway, really good stuff. But it was the 70s and 80s stuff that really turned me on. And the one that I'm going to play first is by probably the greatest punk cover band, in my opinion, called Me First and the Gimme Gimmes. These guys are spectacular. It's guys from other groups, but they come together to do this punk cover stuff, and all they do is cover tunes. And so they've got, Me First and the Gimme Gimmes, Love Their Country, and it's a whole... them covering country tunes. They've got a bunch of 60s stuff, 70s stuff, just a lot of mixed up from different eras, and show tunes, all sorts of stuff. But this was, in my opinion, the best of Me First and the Gimme Gimmes, and it's what first turned me on to them and the whole idea of punk covers. So thank you to my brother for this. But this is Me First and the Gimme Gimmes with their version of Danny's Song. Take a listen.
People smile and tell me I'm a lucky one, and we've just begun. Think I'm gonna have a son. We'll be like she and me, as free as a dove. Come and see me, love. The sun is gonna shine above. Even though we ain't got money, honey, everything will bring a change.
I mean, is that not amazing? Is that not amazing? I love cover tunes in any case. I love a good cover tune. And to me, a good cover tune is something that takes a song that you're already familiar with. So when you hear it, you hear that music fire up, even though it's changed, you know the song, all right? And the lyrics just come naturally from within you because you know it that well. but a good cover will take it and turn it over on its head. We'll give it a new genre, a new take, make it sound completely different. You give me a cover song that sounds just like the original, just someone else's voice, I could care less. All right, but you mix it up, add something new to it, I'm excited. And that's what this does. I love this. And I'm going to get to more. But first, let's break it up a little bit. Let's see what's up next.
And now for something completely different.
Yeah, this is still just stuff I don't really have a category for yet. And it is my Scouts. I love Scouts. All right. I am an assistant Boy Scout leader, and I've been doing that since my oldest got into Boy Scouts when he was in sixth grade. So for 5 years, I've been doing that one. And I love my Cub Scouts. And I've been a Cub Scout den leader for, well, every year that I have had a kid in Cub Scouts, I've been a den leader because I enjoy doing it. I love working with kids. I love teaching Scouts. And there is no reason, I mean, okay, I said this back way back in podcast number one, if you were listening back then. And Scouts in general have this stereotype, this view of being a nerdy sort of pursuit. It's not necessarily. I mean, it's outdoorsies. It's, you know, camping and ropes and blah, blah, blah. I mean, okay, that sounds really bad. But it is. Scouting is really about more of an outdoor kind of style, but also about citizenship and leadership and qualities of a good person. And I love imparting this on kids. And so while, you know, there's sometimes Cub Scouts may seem like it's, you know, a little heavy on the camping and the arts and crafts stuff and the mechanical stuff, there's also places for the nerd in there. And for me, I just got to do this. I mean, not 2 days ago I did this as I'm recording. It was my group of Cub Scouts. This is my third son is in Cub Scouts now. He is a Wolf Scout this year. Well, that means he's a second grader. And so here I have this room full of second graders, and the unit we're supposed to cover this week is courage. Okay, I can do that. And I go in to look up the courage stuff, and the whole unit is first you have to do the character connection on courage, which means we discuss what courage is and how it applies to your life. And then to expand on that, the rest of the unit is giving role-play situations. Ooh, role-playing, I'm already in. Role-play situations where you put the kids in an awkward social situation. You know, a friend wants them to steal something for them, or other kids are picking on the new guy. Or, I mean, these are all simplistic situations for second graders. And you're supposed to help them role play this out to decide what would be the right moral choice here. Okay, I've taken way too long to explain this. Ultimately, it's a really boring unit, okay? Most of the answers are pretty obvious, pretty easy. I mean, we can talk about courage, and we can dress this up, and we can do the role play, and we can make it as exciting as it's going to be, but it's lacking a little something. So, for my part, I thought, okay, I want to add something to courage. And I realized 35 years ago, when I was in Cub Scouts, when I was a Wolf Scout, and my mom was the den leader for me, my favorite, absolute favorite thing that we ever did in Cub Scouts was the week that we got together and my mom had us make medieval armor and helmets and weapons and shields, and we got to dress up as knights. It was the coolest thing I had ever done as a Cub Scout, and I still, to this day, I love this. I don't want to stray too far from the topic. I'll get to that in a little bit. And so I thought to myself, courageous knights. What's more courageous than the classical stereotype of a knight? This will be awesome. And I'm not, now, with these kids, even out of cardboard, was not having them make swords at this point, because I know this group, and the minute the swords were made, the rest of the lesson is completely off. They would have done nothing but whack each other in the face with those things until it was time to go. So we didn't do swords, but we did cut out these shields out of sturdy cardboard, and they got to decorate those. And then I had them cut out paper bags to drape over themselves to make their mail, their armor, and they got to decorate those. And it was heartwarming, because it didn't matter what kind of kid they were. I mean, there's nerd kids in there, there's athletic kids in there, there's outgoing kids, there's introverted, I have a range of kids over my 8 Cub Scouts, and every single one of them loved this to death. I mean, it was heartwarming because I saw, got to see in all of their faces, every single one of them had the same feeling about making this armor that I did when I was their age. It's just magical. And I inspired something in them, and they had a great time. And I mean, and for the rest of the day, I mean, I got out a yardstick that we used as my sword, and I knighted all of them and gave them names and titles, and they spent the rest of the time as knights and kings, and it was glorious. It was really, really cool. I can't tell you how much fun I had. And in the meantime, you know, as they're working on their craft project to make their armor and their shield, we also did talk about all the courage stuff, and we played those pieces out, and they asked questions, I asked questions, and we went back and forth. It was wonderful. I love my scouts, and I had a great time. And I guess to me, it was just the idea that, you know, here was something from my youth, something magical that I could bring forward and share, and you know, warms your heart. It really does. It was just very, very cool stuff. But you know what that means. It's actually time for some more music. I'm going to be doing this all through the show. I mentioned earlier the idea that you had cowpunk, which is the official, I suppose, name for punk music mixed with country. And as an offshoot or related branch of that is something called psychobilly, which I'm actually kind of new to. Just started picking up on this about a month ago. And psychobilly, not necessarily my favorite, but there's some good stuff in there. It's really takes the rockabilly stuff from a while back. I mean, you're kind of Elvis stuff, but amped up a bit. And then, I mean, you crank it again to 11. That's where everything goes in this episode. And you wind up with psychobilly, which is a punk, rockabilly, punk, hillbilly, country, rock sort of thing. And I think the absolute best example of it is the Reverend Horton Heat. And this is the aptly named Psychobilly Freakout. I'm just going to give you a taste of it. Here you go.
It's a psychobilly freakout!
See, if you don't think that's badass, you are dead inside. That's cool, all right? And I will admit, with a lot of this music, a lot of punk music in particular, sometimes it takes you a little bit to warm up to it. But some of them, I mean, you can see the cool hooks right away, right? You can see the intensity, the fun that people are having. Just, you know that they liked making that. And that's impressive to me. When you can feel that joy, that energy coming through, that's something to behold. And we're going to get some more of them, and we'll keep going. But first, take another break from the music, and it is time to visit my gaming table.
I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die.
That's right. Role-playing games, video games, card games. If it fits on my gaming table, then I'm going to share it with you. And this week, as promised last week, I'm actually going to do a whole segment on LARPing, because I actually think this is kind of important. I know I explained it last time, but I'm going to do it again. LARPing is live action role play. And for those of you, you know what? I think most of you know this, but I'm going to back up just a little bit and cover the whole thing. Role playing games in general. I talk about role playing games all the time. When I talk about role playing, I am not talking about video game RPGs. Not my thing at all. No, when I talk role playing games, I am talking about pen and paper role playing games like Dungeons & Dragons is the absolute most famous of all of them, and everybody knows Dungeons & Dragons, or has heard of Dungeons & Dragons. Maybe you have an opinion, maybe not. But the idea of a role-playing game is you sit around with a group of people, and in general, again, there's variations, in general, one person is your game master. They are the referee, the storyteller. They set the scene, and then everyone else plays a character in that scene, all right? And everybody else tells what their character would do. And you can do absolutely anything. You know, if you want to run around hacking off everything with your sword, you can do that. If you want to run screaming naked in circles, you can do that. If you want to go have conversations with the pretty barmaid and try and chat her up for a date later, you can do that. You do anything. So as a character, you play a role in the story. You play a role like an actor on a stage, except you have no script, and you do whatever it is you think your character would do in that situation. And then it's the Game Master's job to arbitrate all of this, make a cohesive story, bring in, you know, all the other characters in the story, tell what happens around you. And then, of course, there's always dice or some other mechanic for determining, you know, if I'm going to hit somebody with my sword, well, what's the chance of actually hitting? How much damage do I do? What are the results of these actions? We have stuff for that. That's role-playing games in a really brief, sketchy nutshell. Live-action role-play is exactly what it sounds like. It's role-playing, except you actually play it out. All right. Normally, role-playing games, you're sitting around a table. All right. Normally, it's a bunch of smelly, sweaty, nerdy dudes sitting around a table, rolling dice, and telling their story to each other right here in this one location. With live-action play, it's very likely that you're going to be dressed up in costumes. So you're going to look, at least to some degree, these aren't always great costumes, though sometimes they are, you're going to dress up to some degree to look like your character. And then you're going to actually act things out. You're actually going to go places, do things. Sometimes it's just within your house as you walk around and talk to people, but you actually perform the actions that you're talking about in your story. And this can be, you know, there's lots of levels of it. There are people that just do it right there in their home and they walk around. There are people who, especially with vampire LARPs, and vampire is a really popular one for LARPing because a lot of times to dress up as a vampire, you really don't need much other than a fake set of fangs and some dark clothing. And then suddenly you're a vampire. And you know what? The fangs are optional. We can just pretend that you got those. So vampire LARPing is popular to a degree because of that. It's actually really simple to dress up as. And you can pretend to be a vampire anywhere. All right, you can go down to the bar, and you and two of your friends can be LARPing your vampire LARP and pretending to be vampires and having actual conversations and pretending the larger story that's going on around you. And who cares that there's a bunch of other people there who have no idea what you're doing? Most of them aren't paying attention to you anyway. All right, but LARPing can get even more advanced to people, you know, who dress up in their armor and they carry their foam weaponry in order to actually beat up on each other to a degree. They may, again, Patton Oswalt does a great LARPing wizard impression where he throws his wadded up pieces of paper at you and yells, "Fireball, fireball, fireball." All right. And so the reason I bring up LARPing, the reason it was brought up last episode, is that LARPing gets a really bad name, even among the gaming community, even among other nerds. LARPing is an easy target. It is something simple to make fun of. But the question is it really justified? And I think the obvious answer is no, not really. I mean, look, LARPers are gamers just like anyone else. They just happen to have a better fashion sense than the rest of us, I hope. Or, you know, they're more committed to a different aspect of the gameplay than I am. I mean, look, I have had role-playing games where I've acted out some of the stuff. I've never done a full-on LARP. Well, wait, let me amend that. I'll get back to that, too. I've never done a full-on LARP, really, but there have been times during a gaming session where we will act certain things out. I've talked about 007, the role-playing game, being one of the worst games I've ever played. But even as we were playing 007, my friend Steve was there, and he comes up to the counter in this hotel, and he's going to pay, and he hands over his Okinawan Express card, because his character was from Okinawa, because we all were in love with the Karate Kid at that time. So anyway, he hands over his Okinawan Express cards, and he actually acts it out. He's actually, you know, he pretends he's reaching into his wallet, he pretends to pull out this card, he pretends to hand it over to me, and then, you know, as we go to hand it back, we realize after a little bit that, oh God, we've been standing here, you know, performing these gestures, acting them out. We didn't even realize we were doing that. I mean, he stood there with his hand out waiting to get his card back forever until I pretended to hand him his card back. And so, you know, we acted out a little bit. It wasn't LARPing, but it was certainly acting out the story as we went. Another time I did a game called Pariah, which, you know, let me toot my own horn, I did write and get published. And I was playing Pariah for the first time with my wife and some friends from college. We all got together for New Year's Eve, and we had a great time, and we played out Pariah. And during this one, there was a bit where it's a story of kids with psychic powers who have been captured by the government, and now they're looking to escape. Okay. And one of my friends, not Pete, was playing the youngest of the kids, I think 12. And he smarts off, and so this guard comes over to threaten him. And so as me playing the guard, I mean, I actually got up out of my chair, walked over to him, and I mean, I just towered over him. I loomed over him as I'm making these threats to this little kid that Pete was pretending to be, not Pete. And when he looked up at me, I mean, the acting ability there, I mean, there was what appeared to be genuine fear in his eyes as he's pretending to be this 12-year-old scared that this guard is going to beat the crap out of him for smarting off. And again, it was kind of an intense moment. And that was actually maybe the first time I ever got out of my chair to act out something during a game. And that's, for some people, that's the LARPing line, is if you've had to get out of your chair, you're a LARPer. But it was really intense, and it really added to the scene. And so, in defense of LARPers, I've never LARPed in any real way. I've never been that devoted to making a costume of any sort. But to their defense, if me getting out of my chair to stand over Pete and act out this scene, if it added that much intensity to our game, if it made it that much more real for us, well, then how much more so for LARPers who are willing to invest in doing the costumes, who are willing to invest in the kind of gameplay that you need to do for acting things out, who are willing to invest in, you know, actual settings and finding locations and props and all of this stuff. How much more intense is their game? I mean, are they that much, you know, are they that far off of Civil War reenactors or other people who dress up and act out battles? You know, it's all, we're all nerds. It's all just a degree of nerdiness, right? There's nothing particularly special about the LARP brand of nerd, other than they're really easy to make fun of. And I think they get a bad rap. And am I still going to make fun of them on a regular basis? Probably so, because it's easy and it's funny. But I don't really mean it, unless they're furry LARPers, in which case I totally mean it. They deserve it. That probably means it's time for some more music, right? For my next set, I just did the Psychobilly. I'm going to do a little more cowpunk, and this is a more of a bluegrass punk. That's how I actually found them, as I was doing searches for bluegrass punk. And it's a band called Old Man Markley, and I don't know how big they really are. I had never heard of them before. They seem obscure, although their stuff's on iTunes, but lots of people's is. And I like lots of songs by Old Man Markley, but my favorite is this one, which is called For Better or Worse.
For better, for worse. Love's a blessing, love's a curse. She's an angel, I'm just a man. And I'll always love her till I can't stand. For better, for worse. Love's a blessing, love's a curse. She's an angel, I'm just a man. And I'll always love her till I can't stand. Well, I met her on a Sunday, she was standing in the sun. I picked up some wild roses, asked her, could I be the one? Took my hand and angels didn't stand in there. She kissed me on the cheeks and threw my roses in the air. For better, for worse. Love's a blessing, love's a curse. She's an angel, I'm just a man. And I'll always love her till I can't stand.
I cannot tell you how much I love that song. And I can't play you the entire thing, but I will tell you that at the very end, yeah, it turns out that she's really just a tease and he's a creepy stalker, and he's got to put her underground because he's not putting up with that. So it's a funny song. It's fun. Really, really dig that style. So, but now it's time for a nerd culture report.
I thought this was bowling for weirdos.
No, of course it's not, Gonzo, but as always, you are oh so close. Okay, this is the Nerd Culture Report. And for this one, this was actually submitted to me as a Podomatic entry from Scree, but I liked it well enough that I thought it should be its own segment, and I wanted to schedule it in rather than just waiting for it to come up randomly. So, Scree says, talk about some awesome musicals. Really, Scree? Well, okay. How about I do that? I guess musicals are something that I had to acquire a taste for. I did not care much for musicals as a kid, except for Grease, because, you know, everybody knew Grease, and it just seemed so cool. Don't go back and rewatch it. Not as cool as you thought. Okay. But for other musicals, they're awesome. I mean, really, really awesome. I would recommend, first off, the greatest musical endeavor of all time, Dr. Horrible's Sing-Along Blog. If you don't like Dr. Horrible, you don't belong here listening to this show. I mean, honestly, okay, and if you haven't seen Dr. Horrible, go watch it now. Go watch it. You can find it online. You can find it at iTunes. Buy the DVD. That's what I did, all right? You'll love Dr. Horrible. Dr. Horrible was a response to the writer's strike. It was Joss Whedon and his brother and some friends deciding that, well, during the writer's strike, they can't write for TV, so what are we going to do? And they wound up writing Dr. Horrible's Sing-Along Blog. And it is spectacular. It stars Neil Patrick Harris as Dr. Horrible, Nathan Fillion as Captain Hammer, and the lovely, effervescent, incredibly intelligent Felicia Day as Penny. And it's just a great, great story. It is a superhero comedy in a musical that touches my soul by the end of it. I mean, it really does. By the very end, if your heart's not breaking, you're not doing it right. It's just good stuff, really brilliantly written. And if you buy the actual DVD, guess what? There is commentary on the DVD that is also a musical. They spent more time, I think, writing the songs for the commentary than they did on the actual musical itself. I mean, it is brilliant. Brilliant stuff. So, my absolute favorite, Dr. Horrible. But, on top of that, I have a bunch of them from over the years, and I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on each one, but I will give you the list. If you want some good musicals that I have enjoyed, and I think you will too, I'm a sucker for Moulin Rouge. I love Moulin Rouge. I thought that thing was great, and it was, yes, the whole conceit of using modern or, you know, 70s, 80s era music and setting it back in Renaissance France, I thought it was beautiful. I thought it was wonderful. And Moulin Rouge totally caught me off guard when I saw it. I did not expect to like it. I was only watching it because my wife wanted to watch it, and it turns out that I really, really loved it. I highly recommend it. Chicago. If you haven't watched Chicago, you need to. All right, Chicago was really well done. I mean, honest to God, whose idea was it to say, you know what? You know, we need a leading man. We need someone who can carry a musical. Richard Gere. Yeah, Richard Gere. Isn't he the guy who's really, really wooden and he only has one facial expression in every movie he does? That's the guy we need to lead a musical for us. And yet it works. It works really, really well. I love Chicago. I own the DVD. I have the soundtrack. Make fun of me all you want, Kyle. I don't care. I love these. All right? Wicked. Wicked, one of the few musicals I've had the joy of seeing in the theater. And seeing it not just in the theater, but I saw it, my wife and I, for our anniversary. We drove to Chicago just to watch Wicked. And so we got to see it in a permanent theater. This was not a traveling company. This was a full permanent theater. They'd been here for ages, and so they had the huge, huge set pieces, and everything was designed. Everything on this stage, everything in this theater was designed to accommodate this musical, Wicked. Wicked, if you don't know, and you should, Wicked is the story of the Wizard of Oz from the Wicked Witch of the West's point of view. It's her story as she grows up, how she came to where she is, how the evil Dorothy ruined everything for her, etc., etc. It is beautifully, beautifully done. A really good story. We had a great time watching it there. If I had a chance to see it again anywhere, I would absolutely go because I had that much fun watching it. And then the most recent one, I've already talked about this. Well, wait, did I talk about it on the podcast or did I only mention it on the website? Either way, the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee, it was performed for us here at our local community theater. We just had this community theater just started up. It is the first year that they've had a community theater in town. And so I know pretty much every person in the cast. Many of them are actually members of our website. And they were brilliant. They did a great job. It was, yes, I mean, it's a community theater production, okay? It's not, you know, it's not some big traveling company. It's just, it's local people who are using their spare time to devote to something that they love and having a really good time doing it. And they were really talented and really good. For a community theater production, it had me laughing nonstop. Beginning to end of this show, I laughed all the way through it. Had a great time. The thing is just really clever, really well written. The guys and girls that were performing it really, really hit the comic marks really well. And also, with Putnam County Spelling Bee, I did not realize that it also had some really touching, some poignant moments in it. I was just caught off guard that, yes, I'm laughing through most of it because it's really, really funny. But there were a few moments that I was touched. And I was like, oh God, that'll break your heart. That's really sad. And even though these are absolutely ludicrous comic characters for the most part, all of them are built around a real core. And I was just tickled to death. Could not have asked for more. I would love to see that one again as well. In answer to you, Scree, who was also in the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee and may well be what prompted him asking this question. Those are some of the awesome musicals that I can remember seeing. I'm sure there are others. I just can't think of them off the top of my head, but those are my absolute favorites. All right. I highly recommend it. And if you're not a musical fan, you know what? There's some of them that you will like. You know what? If you're a nerd, you'll like Dr. Horrible. I don't care what else is going on. You'll like Dr. Horrible. Some of these others, they may take you a while. But for me, I love musicals, and I love these. So, all right, I am way over time so far. I'm already moving into Podomatic territory, and we haven't even gotten to the word of the week. So, we're gonna have to just roll this right along here with some more music, because I am not gonna miss out on any of our punk music this week. This next one, I'm gonna give you a twofer. We're gonna go back to back. Just a little pause in between here. With Celtic punk. Celtic punk is traditional Irish music, traditional Celtic music, with Irish instruments and sounds blended into a punk thing. And there are actually many bands out there doing Celtic punk. My absolute favorite, and these are the ones you're going to hear today, I'm going to give you two songs from the Dropkick Murphys. They are the best at Celtic punk as far as I'm concerned. And when I used to drive cab, and some college kid got in my cab and heard me playing the Dropkick Murphys, and he was like, oh, these guys are so cool. You know what you should check out? You should check out Flogging Molly. They are even better. And as it turns out, I checked out Flogging Molly, and no, they're not. What are you, an idiot? I mean, Flogging Molly is not bad as far as, you know, punk bands go, Celtic punk. But they can't hold a candle to the Dropkick Murphys. These guys are awesome. All right. And this is their first one, which is really, it's harder edged of their stuff. And it's called I'm Shipping Up to Boston, and you may even have heard it because I think it's popped up in a couple of commercials now. But love this song. Here we go. Feel that? That was Shipping Up to Boston. Well, it's I'm Shipping Up to Boston from the Dropkick Murphys. And they also do a rendition of Amazing Grace that everyone absolutely raves about. I have a couple of their albums worth of stuff, and I love the Dropkick Murphys. But this is their newest one that I've bought. I don't know if it's their newest song, but it's the newest one I've bought. Absolutely in love with this song. It's called Peg of My Heart. Take a listen.
Peg of My Heart, I love you. Don't let us part. I love you. I always knew it would be you. Peg of My Heart. Since I heard your lilting in laughter at your Irish heart, I'm after Peg of My Heart.
That was Peg of My Heart. That's beautiful. I love that. It's just fun. I like Irish music anyway. I like Celtic music. And to hear it in a punk version just tickles me. It's great stuff. Let's move on quick. You got to get the little ones out of the room. Make sure you're sitting down for this.
Nerd rage came flashing back. And I just looked at him and went, "Rrr!"
That's right. It's time for some nerd rage. Nerd rage this week is... I have to be careful about this one because it's something that just drives me batty, and yet I'm guilty of it as much as the next nerd, and we all do it. All right, this is rage against nerds is what this is, because we are also guilty of it. Part of what makes us nerds, part of what the core of us is, our obsession with the things that interest us. All right, whether it is role-playing games or sports statistics, or music. Or fashion, whatever it is, our obsession with it is what we use to define ourselves as nerds most of the time. And the problem with this is we want to talk about our obsession all the time. All right, why do you think I have a podcast? I have a podcast so that I have an excuse to haver on about all these things that I love, all right? And I justify it to myself by going, well, I'm not really... driving anyone crazy with my incessant babbling because, well, if you're here listening to it, you chose to. All right, this is your own fault. You're subjecting yourself to this. It's not me, right? Right? Good. All right, but because of our obsession, we want to tell people about the stuff we love. We're excited about it. And the problem is most people really don't care. All right, and we've got to stop because this is what makes us look so nerdy. This is what is, all right. If you have discovered a brand new video game, and you love this new video game, and you have been playing it pretty much nonstop for the last 4 days, I get that. I have been there, all right? And I also understand that because you've been playing nonstop for 4 days, you see this game when you close your eyes. It's there when you sleep, all right? When you're not at the game, you're thinking about it, all right? When you're sitting on the toilet doing your business... your mind is running over scenes from the game. You are working out strategies. You're thinking, oh, this is what I'm doing next time. Your mind is locked in on this thing. So when you're hanging out with friends, what do you want to talk about? The only thing that you have on your mind, all right? The same way a dieter who's fresh onto his new diet can't seem to talk about anything but food. Doesn't that drive you crazy? I mean, do you really want to sit there and listen to them go on for 10 minutes about how they made their choice of what to have for breakfast? I mean, really? Okay, well, it's the same thing with your video game. You've got to stop, all right? I don't care if you tell me about your video game, all right? Come tell me that, oh, a great game. It is, it's got swords and dragons, and it's a lot of dungeons. It reminds me a lot of Zelda, but it does this really cool thing with, okay, good. You gave me about 5 sentences, and I'm really excited. And you know what? If I want to go play that game, well, you've given me enough information to start making that decision. Or maybe I'll ask you some questions. But if I don't ask you any questions, shut up. Oh, and again, I'm just as bad about this as other people. All right, I get this. All right, and it's so tough because we're so excited and we want that passion to come through. We want to sell other people on it, okay? But I don't need to hear a play-by-play of the last 30-minute game session that you played. All right, I don't need to know all of that because, frankly, I wasn't there. The exciting part of a video game is that you're playing it. All right? So, and I'm picking on video games because it's an easy one, and I get a lot of that. All right? Every one of my kids, when they hit about age 9, I have to set a limit and go, look, dude, don't talk to me about Pokemon anymore. Okay? I know. The games are cool. They are really awesome. I know. You've almost collected them all. And yet, I don't need to hear about every battle. I don't need to hear the stats for every Pokemon. If I liked Pokemon that much, I would play it myself, and I would learn. All right? But you telling me that Nidorino has this many hit points and these levels of attacks, I don't even know if Nidorino is a real Pokemon. I'm making names up. All right, that's how disconnected I am from it. But I don't need to know. Stop. You know, you give me two or three sentences to tell me how cool this thing is that you really, really love. Give me the back cover blurb that sells it to me. And then shut up. If I have some questions, I'll ask you. And I hate to be really harsh about this. Again, I've done it to you, but man, it's something we've all got to learn. I mean, I have people that, honestly, it has been, it takes him almost as long to describe the TV show he watched last night as it took him to watch the TV show he watched last night. All right. Well, you know what? If I was that interested, I would watch it. All right. In fact, if you can tell me in 5 minutes what the show was about and I'm really interested, I'll go find it on Hulu and I will watch it. I promise I will, because you made it sound really interesting. But, you know, if you give me the 20-minute description of a 30-minute show, well, guess what? I'm done now. You've spoiled all the good jokes. I don't really need to go look it up. Am I sounding a little intense about this? It's something that keeps coming back to me, and it's everybody. All nerds are really guilty of this, and it's something that sets us apart. And it's a real basic social skill sort of thing, but you got to learn when other people are interested. Now, the caveat to this is if you're really excited about that video game and you have a friend that also plays that video game, well, go to town, my friend. That's what you guys do. That's where the camaraderie comes in. That's where you can talk. All right. I have played lots of Dungeons and Dragons. I am obsessed with the game. I love Dungeons and Dragons. And if I can sit down with someone else who plays Dungeons and Dragons, well, I'll tell them my stories. They'll tell me their stories. If we've ever played together, we will reminisce about all the great things we used to do when we played Dungeons and Dragons together. And it's wonderful. All right. And you'll know that you've got an appropriate social situation because you'll be giving it to them, they'll be giving it back, and you're both interested in what the other one has to say. Aha! Harmony has been achieved. But, oh, I'm just done, all right? Just turn it off, give me the high points, and then let's move on with something that we can both enjoy. All right. I feel better having gotten that off my chest, don't you? Okay, but it is now time for a little more music. And for this one, this is a group called Gogol Bordello. And if you already know that name, then you know what's coming. Gogol Bordello takes gypsy music, traditional Romanian, Rome? I don't know. But takes what they call gypsy music, and they make gypsy punk. And it is, I'll just give you some fair warning, that I have known about Gogol Bordello for a long time. I've always been fascinated with the idea of gypsy punk. I've looked them up many times, and it has taken me a while to warm up to them. I love their songs now. I really do. But there's a few of them. The first time I heard them, I'm like, that's music? But then you kind of get what they're doing, and I really dig it. And this is probably my favorite from Gogol Bordello, Start Wearing Purple.
Start wearing purple, wearing purple. Start wearing purple for me now.
all your sanity, and wits they will all vanish, I promise. It's just a matter of time. So yeah,
start wearing purple, wearing purple. Start wearing purple for me now. All your sanity and wits, they will all vanish, I promise. It's just a matter of time.
I know you since you were a 20. I was 20 and thought that some years from now
did you love it or did you hate it? Because there is no in between. Gogo Bordello is just cool fun. I can imagine that they probably have some of the most kick-ass concerts ever. All right. But it is time for the badass movie quote of the week. This one's a quick one. I just watched the 1992 movie Dead Alive, directed by Peter Jackson, and the thing is a cult classic, and it's a really horrible movie in a lot of ways, a fun movie in a lot of ways, but this is the absolute best line, one of my favorite kick-ass quotes of all time, from right in the middle of the movie. Father Magruder, the priest, has just entered the graveyard, and he sees our hero battling zombies. And I don't even know if he recognizes at this point that they are zombies, but Father Magruder says, "No, let me in here, I'll help." And we all expect that Father Magruder is just about to get himself completely torn apart by zombies because he doesn't know what he's gotten himself into. And instead, he starts pulling off Matrix moves. He is a kung fu frickin' master. And he is dismembering zombies with his feet. He is incredible. And what does he say? All right, after taking out the first zombie with this completely badass set of moves, he stops. The spotlight's on him, and he says, "I kick ass for the Lord." That is badass. I love that quote. "I kick ass for the Lord." You cannot go wrong with that kind of comedy. And I mean, the minute he said it, I am rolling. And the whole rest of that scene, I could not stop laughing. Good, good stuff. Again, it's a bad movie, but you should watch it once, because there's some worthwhile stuff in there. And to follow it up, it's actually time for the word of the week. See, I messed up because I knew what the word of the week was ahead of time, and I used it on the boards. I just, in a passing phrase, used it on the boards. And someone, Eliahad, latched onto it and ran with it. And so now it's already getting bandied about on the boards. It's not even going to be that tough for you to work it into conversation this week. The whole point of our word of the week is I'm going to give you something. I'm going to give you this word, and it's up to you to use it appropriately somewhere in your daily life. All right. The best place to use it would be on my boards so that we can all see it. And that way we learn that, A, you listen to the podcast, and B, you are capable of applying the knowledge that you learn. So our word of the week this week is petard, P-E-T-A-R-D, petard. And specifically the whole phrase, hoisted on your own petard, or hoist by his own petard. As originally, this is a phrase, hoist on your own petard, was a phrase that came from Hamlet. It's a Shakespearean invention. At least that's the first recorded instance of it. And to be hoist on one's own petard means your downfall has been your own devices. You've been caught in your own trap, and it has ruined you. You've fallen into your own plot, basically. And where does it come from? Well, a petard is a small, bell-shaped, actually, bomb used medieval times, used to break down a gate or a wall. You would use this bomb, a petard. And so thus, to be hoist on your own petard, which means you've been caught in your own bomb blast, you basically blew yourself up with your own weapon. But the more interesting part of the word petard is where it comes from. It actually originally comes from the French word petard, which means a fart. Yes, these are bombs named after a fart. And the French actually comes from the old French word pet, meaning a fart, which, previous to that, comes from the Latin pedere, which means to fart. So there you go. The Latin word, the ancient Latin word, ancient Roman word for fart, thus gives us the phrase, hoist on your own petard. I am very happy about that. And that leads us right to our last bit of music. This is going to be the last punk song I give you today. And this one, this is the genre of ska punk. I love ska. I love ska punk. Groups like No Doubt, stuff like that, do really good ska music. And this is from my favorite punk band, actually, Real Big Fish. And of all the stuff they do, this is my favorite. Just listen.
I gotta go before I do something stupid. I gotta go before I do something lame. It's your fault that I'm in the mess I'm in. And you think I'm cool, but I don't, man. And maybe it's too soon, but I think it's too late. And things like bad timing just won't wait. Maybe it's not right. Made a friend tonight. I just wanted to talk to you, but then I started wondering if she's the one or not. So I gotta go, before I do something stupid. I gotta go.
And the name of that song is A Little Doubt Goes a Long Way. And I just think it's fun and funny, and you can hear those ska horns coming in, and just the whole thing comes together really well. It's just, man, it's fast. It's happy. Even, you know, music like this, even when they're talking about really horrible, depressing things, can sound really, really happy. And I love songs like that. Songs that it sounds upbeat, and yet when you listen to the lyrics, yeah, you know, it's a little off. That was actually the origin of, I don't have time for this, but that was the origin of the song Bad Moon Rising by Creedence Clearwater Revival. They wanted to write this song that was really dark. I mean, it's all about this apocalyptic vision, these horrible things going on. But they were afraid that they wouldn't be able to get past the FCC or whatever the equivalent was in those days. They were afraid they wouldn't get radio play if it was that dark. So they took those same lyrics, that same dark, apocalyptic, Revelations-type setting, and they put it to really happy music. And I don't know if they would have otherwise, but they got on the radio and the thing's a hit, and I love that song to this day. I think that thing is great. That is my punk music for the day, all right? That was, I know it was a lot. It was, I think, 6 selections, okay? And I hope it was worth it. I don't know if I'll ever do another music-packed episode like this one again, but I love punk, and I didn't want to break it up over a bunch of episodes. I wanted to give you guys this whole vision, and I hope you liked it as much as I did. Because now, it's time for the Pa-O-Matic. Hot dog! This is Nerd Pride Radio's Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 and his fully pimped out pop-up Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. Where do these topics come from? Well, that is where you come in. If you want to hear me babble on about something, you need to send your questions or your topics to me by email or, best, send it to me in a private message on our forums. I will add it to my Pod-O-Matic list, and this Pod-O-Matic will become whatever you want it to be about. And I am just now down to full list. There it is. I have only 60 entries on my list now. So after we get done with today, I mean, I'm really whittling it down. So if you've got some ideas, send them in. Look, there's almost nothing left, so pretty good chance you're going to get yours read in the next couple episodes, right? You want to be in on this? All right. But R2 has rolled, and he is waiting patiently for me, and my first number is 21. This is a Podomatic entry from Kaz. And Kaz says, tell a story about Paranoia. Okay. Paranoia is one of my favorite role-playing games of all time. I love Paranoia. I'm going to tell you a story I've told before because I don't have enough brain cells left in me to think up something original. But my favorite Paranoia story is how me and my brother and our friend Steve, again Steve, how we first got it. All right? The whole point of Paranoia is it's a really dark science fiction game, and the setting is not terribly important for this discussion, but you live in a futuristic complex, and this complex is ruled over by the computer. And the computer is itself paranoid and crazy, and so it keeps everybody oppressed, and it sends people on nonsensical missions, and loyalty to the computer is ultimate, and any signs of treason are punishable immediately by death. And so people act a little crazy because everybody's worried at any moment that they're going to get killed. And they wind up, they have secret societies with secret missions to work for the computer, to work against the computer. You never know what's going on. And the intent of the game is that the players are actually supposed to be at odds with each other. They're supposed to not trust each other. They're supposed to work against each other at times. And to me and my role-playing group, that was totally alien to us. I was 15 at the time, something like that, and that had never occurred to us. The idea that you would play a game where the players didn't work together made no sense at all. And so we played our first game of Paranoia pretty straight. I mean, you know, the guys, Kyle and Steve were the two players, and they worked pretty much together. And we didn't quite grasp what was supposed to happen because, I mean, we had a good time. It was an interesting setting by itself. But we didn't really get it. And then the second game that we played of Paranoia, I saw in the book that you're supposed to give, you know, because everyone's a member of a secret society. And if you're discovered as a member of a secret society, it's your ass. So, but you're supposed to work towards those ends. And all right, so it gives suggestions for secret society missions. And so one of them that I gave was they're supposed to be on a trip. They're going to whatever the actual mission is never important in Paranoia. It's how you get there and how you kill everybody in the meantime. And on this trip, they're going on a long journey, and everyone has backup clones. So if you die, you have 5 spares that can be brought out to replace you as need be. So you can die 6 times in the game before you're completely dead and out. So you always have these spare clone copies of yourself. And so on this trip, they were traveling by cruise ship, and in the hold of the ship, they had clone tanks that were holding all of their spare clones for them. And for Steve's secret society mission, I had told him that his secret society wants him to go down to the hold of the ship, find where the clone tanks are, and then smash them all and kill all the clones. They felt that cloning was evil, and therefore he's supposed to go smash them. All right. Now, when I gave him this mission, I don't know what I expected him to do with it, because clearly I knew he wasn't going to go smash the clones. I mean, those are his own backup copies. Why would anyone, you know, if he's only got 6 lives, why would he go kill 3 or 4 of them out of the gate? That would just be suicidal. It would be stupid. So clearly he wasn't going to do that, but I didn't know what he would do with this mission. So, and that's actually one of my favorite tricks with role-playing games, is just give people impossible situations and then see what they do, because no situation is truly impossible. All right, that's one of my favorite things. You give them something that is completely inescapable, something that seems absolutely crazy and impossible, and then watch them solve it, and it's magical. All right, so that's what this was supposed to be. So here we are in the game, and Steve, by note, has been passing me notes saying that he's searching in the hull of the ship. He's going to go find the clone tanks. And so he's doing that, and we're doing this all by passing notes. And so my brother Kyle says that, well, I'm going to go on patrol. I'm just going to kind of wander around. And he happens to wander through the exact area where Steve is down there. And Steve, once he got there, got himself a sledgehammer, and he started smashing tanks. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, I mean, look, if he says he's going to start smashing the clone tanks and killing his own clones as well as everybody else's, okay, I'm good with that. I mean, that's what he wants to do. I didn't expect it. We'll go with it, right? So My brother says he's on patrol, and he happens to walk through the same area, and you just got to picture it. Here comes my brother, on guard, armed to the teeth. He walks into the room, and there is his buddy Steve with a sledgehammer raised up over his head, frozen in position just before smashing yet another clone. And if you look around on the floor, there's shattered glass and water and dead clones littering the floor all around him. And so, here you go, Kyle. Steve's smashing up all the clones. There's dead clones everywhere. What do you do? And Kyle, I mean, he really didn't have a whole lot of choice at this point. He looks at me, and he was just so perplexed. I mean, just so, because the shock was that Steve was actually doing this. And Steve is just grinning like an idiot at this point, because he is having so much fun. He got it long before any of the rest of us did. Steve is having a great time. And Kyle says, I shoot him. Which, again, was antithesis to everything we had ever done in role-playing games before. You don't shoot your partner. You just don't do it. But at this point, Steve has just proved he's willing to murder all of your clones. What is he supposed to do? And so Kyle pulls out his gun, and he shoots Steve and kills him dead right there. And that was when the floodgates opened for us. We laughed like you wouldn't believe. And we realized that is what this game is about. That's why they give you all those backup clones, so you can go around killing each other. Holy crap. I love Paranoia. And like I say, that was the game where we got it. And it was just a great time. And we have played a million games of Paranoia since then. And most of them are brilliant. Most of them are a ton of fun. And in fact, I just realized that when I started Nerd Pride Radio, when I opened up the website a while back, I was in the middle of a Paranoia game, and I abandoned it, and I feel horrible. So to all of you who were playing in that game, I apologize. I'm going to try putting together a new Paranoia game, because we need to get that thing going again. I love Paranoia. Thank you for the question, because, in fact, Kaz, you were one of the ones who was in that game. I need to send Kaz an email. I don't even think he's on the website anymore. I don't know where he's gotten himself off to. So we'll have to bring him back, see if we can get him into Paranoia again, because this is a great game, and we need to move forward. And we come up with a 57. This is from Zimnipot. And Zimni asks, have you ever taken a higher math course? And he has higher in quotation marks, which I assume means that have I ever taken a math course while high? To which the answer is no. No, of course not. If the answer is higher math, as in, you know, calculus and advanced calculus and all these great statistical classes. Oh, yeah, I minored in math. Didn't I mention that last podcast? I minored in math. I took a lot of math courses. Most of them I loved. And if I haven't ever said it before, I'm the kind of guy who reads advanced math texts for fun. All right? I have gone to the library to pick up math books. I once got from my wife a book about math for my birthday because I love math. It's awesome stuff. So, yeah, of course I have. It's great. Number 90. That's off the chart. We'll have to do it again. 47. All right, from Scree. Scree says, what's your standing with Jawas? I tower about 3 feet over them. I am freaking huge. I am a giant among Jawas. They fear me. I am their god. Number 53. This one is from a I don't know who this is. This came out of email. This is from Billy Bob. Billy Bob says, who is the funniest comedian working today? Oh, there are so many. And I am a huge comedy nerd. I love stand-up comedy. I love behind the scenes, behind the curtain stories about the workings of comedy. And comedy clubs and how people have come up through the ranks and how I love comedy and I love stand-ups. And if you're into that, there's actually a lot of podcasts out there. The WTF podcast by Mark Maron, probably the greatest podcast going right now about comedy and comedians. Really good stuff. But the funniest comedians working today, hands down, I have two, and it is Patton Oswalt and his great friend Brian Posehn. These two guys, I think, are an absolute riot. And if you only know Patton Oswalt as the guy from King of Queens, the nerdy friend from King of Queens, or as the voice of Ratatouille. Be prepared that most really good stand-up comics, in my opinion, they have their stand-up material is rougher, dirtier, and he's brilliant, and he is a wordsmith and a nerd in all of its glorious facets, and Patton Oswalt is just really, really funny. And Brian Posehn, again, he's a heavy metal nerd, and he is wonderful. I love these guys. You know what? If you're interested, go look them up on YouTube. They have all sorts of clips. You know, if you're really interested, you can buy their stuff. You can find it. They have their specials on Comedy Central. But Patton Oswalt, Brian Posehn, great, great comics. And R2 gives me a 0.5. So, number 5 from Brasky. Brasky says, this is a good one, rank your top 3 New Mutants from the 80s and justify your answers. Oh, you think I can't? First off, the New Mutants is a comic book, started in the 80s. It is a spinoff of the X-Men. The New Mutants were the kind of training class, the teen version of the X-Men, the up-and-comers. And from the original team, well, not all completely original, but from the 80s, the team and then the additions that came shortly after the beginning. My number one pick is Wolfsbane. She's actually maybe not the best of the New Mutants, but I got a soft spot in my heart for her. I love Wolfsbane. Rain Sinclair. She is a Scottish chick who, a teenager obviously when the series started, and she has the ability to transform into a wolf. So very much like a werewolf, except she has full control over it. And because of her religion and her upbringing, she has a lot of guilt over her abilities and feels that they come from Satan, and she had some interesting character development stuff. But I always had a really soft spot for her. I was always in love with Wolfsbane when we were reading the comics as a kid, because she was about my age. She's a redhead, and I got a thing for redheads. And she had that vulnerability, that confused, sensitive, vulnerable thing going on that I found her really interesting. So I like Wolfsbane. That's number one. Number two is Magic. And Brasky, you will completely understand my love of Magic. I think she was absolutely wonderful. Magic was Ilyana Rasputin, the little sister to Colossus, the guy who changes into organic steel. And Magic had teleportation abilities and later Eldritch Magic abilities that she picked up from her stint in Limbo. And she was just beautiful. She was a badass, kick-ass chick warrior even before Buffy the Vampire Slayer made that the go-to Vogue thing to be, all right? Ilyana was just crazy cool, all right? Always liked Magic. Number three, I'm torn. I want to say Danny, who's, I can't remember what her superhero name was because she kept changing it. But Danny was she was American Indian. She was one of the oldest, I think. Had the ability to bring out people's fears and make them manifest as illusions. I liked her a lot, but I got to go with Sam Guthrie. I got to go with Cannonball, and I'll tell you why. Cannonball's power was not spectacular, but I thought his character was fascinating. All right, country bumpkin who is trying to find his way with his newfound powers in this new setting, and I thought he really came along really well. I just thought Sam was fascinating. He was just a good character, and because he wanted to be a protector. That was his role, is he so badly wanted to be the protector, the leader, he wanted to be that guy. He wanted to be a hero, but he was just so awkward, so incredibly awkward, and it took him so long to kind of come into his own on that. And I haven't seen much of him since he grew up, joined X-Factor, all of this stuff. I have no, or X-Force, or I don't even know where he went. But I always thought he was just a great character. Is that enough justification? Or do you need more? Because honestly, my other choices really, I mean, Sunspot was just a douchebag. Magma was a really generic, gorgeous chick who was terribly underdeveloped. Who else was there? I don't even remember. Oh, Doug? Yeah? Psylocke? Was that, or was that his name? No, that's not Psylocke. That was, he was Duglocke, because he combined with Warlocke to become Duglocke, and he was Cypher. That was the name he went by. Yeah, okay, yeah, because his ability was the ability to translate languages and codes. Was that his mutant power? Yeah, that was cool. No, I'm going to stick with the ones I got. We are running short on time. Let's see if we can get through a few more of these really quick. Number 13 from McDiddles. When you are given the option to have complete dominance over fire, earth, water, or air, which element would you choose? Oh, earth. I'm an earthbender. I have always been an earthbender. Period. There is no other choice. Number 11. Ooh, again from Zimnipot. Zimnipot says, have you ever watched My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic? That's all one title. My Little Pony, colon, Friendship is Magic. If you haven't watched it, then why not? It's awesome! Oh, Zimny, no. No, I haven't watched it because I've never even heard of it, and even if I had, I'm not a four-year-old girl. Did I not tell you that? It's hard to tell because there's no visuals here, but yeah, no, I have not seen that. 07 from McDiddles again. McDiddles says, what is your favorite They Might Be Giants song? Oh, you know what? I should do some They Might Be Giants. I really should. There's so many. I own probably 15 albums by They Might Be Giants, something like that. I've been a huge fan of them since I first heard of them 20 years ago in college. I love They Might Be Giants. I've seen them in concert. And in fact, McDiddles asks this question, I'm sure, because we're going to go see They Might Be Giants. Me and my wife and my son and McDiddles are all going to go see They Might Be Giants next week. Tuesday, in fact. So you're probably listening to this, what, Monday morning? Well, tomorrow I'm going to go see They Might Be Giants in concert again. I can't wait. They are great. But as for my favorite song from They Might Be Giants, I think it's Don't Let's Start. It's really the first song of theirs that I really fell in love with, and it's always been dear to me. I like almost everything off of their Flood album. But I also like the Mesopotamians. I like their very first song, Everything Right is Wrong Again. I use it here in the podcast. There's just so many good ones. Oh, Letterbox. Letterbox may be even better than Don't Let's Start. I don't know. That's a close one. But I can't really pick. I just recently, because the concert is coming up, I went through and I found their set list from their last, dozen concerts. And so from the set lists at these various shows, I made up a list of most likely songs that we were probably going to hear coming up, and I just love it. I got about 35, 40 songs on there. I've been playing the crap out of that. I love They Might Be Giants. Don't make me pick one. Don't. Okay, this is the last one. We've got to be done, R2. You've got to stop. Number 28. This is from Brasky. And Brasky says, DM screen or no DM screen? Okay, when playing role-playing games, you put up the Game Master screen in front of you to help. That way, if you put up the screen, you've got a place to put your notes behind it, and you can write things on your little map, and you can roll dice where no one else can see them. The GM screen is just a way to protect your private information, because as the Game Master, well, there's a lot of things that you're going to have in your notes and in the characters you've drawn up and all this stuff that you don't want the players to see yet until it's time for the big reveal. So you've got to have a place to hide all that. And putting it behind the screen is one of the easiest ways to do it. My only problem with it is the table that I game at is not really big enough to manage a screen and then still have me reach around the screen in order to work with the map. Maybe I should move to the side of the table. Man. Maybe. I like having the DM screen. I like having it available just to put stuff behind it. Now, when I was younger, I used to cheat on the dice a lot as the Game Master to make things go the way I felt would be most beneficial. I don't cheat on the dice ever anymore that I can think of. So therefore, the screen is not nearly as important for the cheating aspect, but it would still be nice just to have a place to jot stuff down without the players being able to read it and know what's coming. You know? So I like having the screen. That is my preference, is to have the screen. Just right now, I haven't been using it as often as I should, as often as I want to, because it's kind of awkward at the moment. But you know what? I'm in my Game Master chair right now. I really should move these things around. I should rearrange, and we'll get a better setup, and I'll get the screen out there. I'm glad you brought this to my attention, because otherwise I'd just kind of keep letting it go and putting it off, and I need to focus on it. This is important. This podcast is copyright 2011 by Nerd Pride Radio. The featured music this week was, in order, Me First and the Gimme Gimmies with Danny's Song, the Reverend Horton Heat with Psychobilly Freakout, Old Man Markley with For Better or For Worse, the Dropkick Murphys doing Shipping Up to Boston and Peg of My Heart, Gogol Bordello with Start Wearing Purple, and Real Big Fish performing A Little Doubt Goes a Long Way. The opening and closing theme is from the Beastie Boys' Sabotage as performed by the Penelopes. The bumper clips this week are taken from Weezer's In the Garage, Beck's Where It's At, and Words by Missing Persons. All of these music and clips are available on iTunes. You should check them out. You should buy them, because I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them, all right? If you want to do something nice for this podcast, head on over to iTunes and write up a really nice review for us. If you want to contact me, you can always email me at mike@nerdprideradio.com, or you can check out the Facebook page at facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But to be totally honest, the best way to talk to me is to come over and sign up for our forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. Sign up, send me a message, hang out.
Time and your kiss.